It's 10:01 a.m. on a Monday, all at once. Your sales leader needs to know which deals are at risk. Your PM wants feature adoption by cohort, and your CFO needs one last graph for the board. Now your data team has to say no to somebody. Hex changes that. Ask any data question in plain English and get an analyst-grade response, all backed by your actual business context as defined by your data team. Start saying yes to more data questions at hex.ai.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome to Formative Media with me, Christian Spicer, the show that celebrates the media that inspires, influences, and defines us. Joining me on today's show is podcaster, host, and broadcast journalist Andrea Renee.
The way that social media has changed, particularly in the last 5 years, really makes the world feel so much smaller than it actually is, right? The world is a very, very big place. And when you actually get on an airplane or a boat and you go somewhere across the world, you see, oh, wow, this is not what I thought it was. Actually, I should go see more places and stop just trusting the internet for everything.
You might know Andrea from her excellent video game podcast, What's Good Games, or perhaps you've seen her hosting panels at San Diego Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con, or from her time on GameStop TV, among many other things. I loved the conversation I had with Andrea so much, and I think you're really going to love it too. But before we get to that, if you love this show, please tell your friends about it. We are a truly independent show trying to make something big, bold, audio rich, and something that punches way above its weight. I'm super proud of this show, and I'd love it if you told your friends about us. You can also follow us on social media if you like. We're on Blue Sky, Instagram, YouTube, and Threads, where you can find us as Formative Media Show. And if you want ad-free episodes, access to our bonus show Zeitgeist, and more, consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/formativemediashow. It is truly what makes this show possible. Okay, time for a quick ad break, and then we're back with Andrea right after this.
It's 10:01 a.m. on a Monday, all at once. Your sales leader needs to know which deals are at risk, your PM wants feature adoption by cohort, and your CFO needs one last graph for the board. Now your data team has to say no to somebody. Hex changes that. Ask any data question in plain English and get an analyst-grade response, all backed by your actual business context as defined by your data team. Start saying yes to more data questions at hex.ai.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I'm super excited about what you're bringing to the show, but I got to admit, if we were playing 20 questions, I would have lost big time.
I know, right? What's really fun about the thing that I picked is that it is not only formative for me as an individual, but it was formative for millions of students over multiple decades. And anyone who follows my work, primarily in the video game and tech space, right, assumes that I'm going to bring a video game to this show because that's what I cover. I cover video games. But they came to me at a time in my life when I was much older, when I think about the ones that were really formative for me personally, and how do I extrapolate what was meaningful to me to why is it formative as a piece of art in general, which is what I love about your show and how you're doing these deep dives, is kind of looking at it from both of those angles with the guests you have. And one of the things that comes to mind always when people ask me, you know, why did you decide to go into on-camera reporting, or why did you decide to become a host, and you know, how did you get into journalism? And the thing I always come back to, the thing that inspired me to pursue my broadcast journalism degree and then ultimately my career, was Channel One News.
Mrs. Smith's doing seventh grade homeroom.
Mr. Palmerson's class.
Coach Kennedy's second period class at Emanuel County Institute.
From Westbrook Middle School in Paramus, New Jersey.
That does it for today's headlines. Coming up, have you ever wondered what it's like to get behind the wheel of a race car?
Hey, I'm Anderson Cooper. I worked at Channel One in the early 1990s, which, yes, means I'm very old.
Hi, Channel One. I'm Ashley Benson from ABC Family's Pretty Little Liars.
I think the one with the Dalai Lama was really cool.
How he was on Snapchat, I thought that was really interesting to see.
Channel One has actually helped me in a lot of ways. They make me see a different side to things.
When you look at everything that Channel One has done over the past three decades, everybody who's come out of there, there are a few things that make me more proud than to say I'm an alum of Channel One.
Watching it in middle school, seeing people like Tracy Smith and Lisa Ling and their entire roster of incredible on-camera reporters really made me want to go out into the world and tell stories about what's happening in the world. And that's why I think it's such an important piece of media.
I absolutely love this. I am a parent to a current middle schooler and a rising soon-to-be second middle schooler. So, you know, my house is going to be tons of fun next year.
You got this, Dad. You got it.
Thank you. Deep breaths. Calm thoughts. I love the idea. Well, one, this is our first episode of something that is bigger than one specific piece of media, which I love. When I set out to create this show, you know, the idea was it could be an album, it could be a TV series, it could be a painting, it could be a specific episode of a TV show, anything and everything works. We're just celebrating media. And I think it's fascinating, this idea of kind of celebrating Channel One News as a whole, or having that big idea being the thing that was so formative for you. Going back to middle school, Andrea, and when you were first exposed to Channel One News, do you have this core memory of the first time seeing it or the first time being introduced to it? I picture the TV on the rolly cart, you know, being brought into homeroom or something like that.
It's close.
Okay.
It's close. Not quite. So I was in eighth grade the first time my school got Channel One in Fargo, North Dakota, at Ben Franklin Junior High. And the TV was mounted in this giant metal box in the corner of the classroom to the side of where the chalkboard was. And we were all sitting in our desks, and the teacher would like close the blinds in the room, and then we would watch it. And it was the not only a moment to kind of take a little break from the fun part of eighth grade school, but it was an opportunity for me as somebody from a pretty isolated place like Fargo, North Dakota, to see a lot of what was happening in the world.
Okay, here are some fun facts about Fargo. One, the movie's excellent. Ooh, maybe someone will pick that as their piece of formative media for a future episode. Also, the TV series is excellent too. Also, Fargo is the most populous city in North Dakota with a little less than 140,000 people. Along those lines, kinda, there's a cricket stadium in India that seats 132,000 people. Maybe the city of Fargo should go on a road trip and sell out the stadium. In the U.S., the University of Michigan has the largest stadium, with a capacity of just over 107,000 people, but I'm getting distracted. This is supposed to be about Fargo, North Dakota. So, in addition to Andrea, NPR's Ari Shapiro is from Fargo, so is NFL quarterback Joe Burrow, and so is baseball player Roger Maris. Shout out to the fine folks from Fargo, North Dakota.
There's a lot of things to do in the world. There's a lot of stories to tell. I would love to go out into the world and meet those people and tell their stories.
Yeah, I think especially because, you know, thinking back to that time, news was not gate kept. It's always gate kept to some extent, even back to like the World War II ad reel, even to social media being owned by, you know, 2 to 3 people now. But it was less accessible, I think. You'd maybe got the morning newspaper. You had some local newspapers. You had morning news and evening news. And that was kind of it. And if you didn't watch or read those, you had what your friend told you or your aunt told you or your neighbor or something like that. But the idea of seeing into the world, the big world, was certainly different. Whereas now, sometimes whether you want to or not, you know, you pick up your phone and you see into the big world and you see all of the terrible things that are happening everywhere and also a lot of the great things that are happening other places, the uplifting stories and stuff like that. But we're so dialed into it all the time, if we want to be. That news addiction is something that I think for folks listening to this, maybe didn't experience or don't remember, there was a time before that was possible. There was a time where your access to news, I think even in a big city, was just far more limited than it is today. And I'm curious if when, you know, you had this window into the bigger world, into outside of your own town, into your own state, were you thinking, how do I get there? Or were you thinking, oh man, this is so much worse than I thought?
I mean, listen, when you look at stories about war, and when I was in middle school, it was Kosovo was a big story, right? So that was a really daunting thing to watch footage from. But the news was much more censored back then than it is now, because there was, as you mentioned, limited access, particularly limited access for people with video cameras. And that's dramatically different today, right? Everybody has a video camera in their pocket now. And I never looked at it as a scary place. I always looked at it as, wow, there's so much out there to experience and explore, and I want to go see it. I want to go see the world. I want to do it. And what better way than becoming a journalist and going and having somebody else pay for the flight to go somewhere? And then when you really start to think about what you're doing, you're not going on vacation, Andrea. You're going to work. And a lot of those places were really intense situations, particularly some of the Channel One reporters. They were so young when they started. Like Lisa Ling tells a great story about when she got cast to work at Channel One, she was 18 years old. And they were sending her to active war zones as a member of the press corps. And that boggles my mind to think about the idea of a news station sending an 18-year-old somewhere that is getting active live fire, right? Like that's bonkers.
And so during any given month, I would be sent to cover stories in Afghanistan, Iran, Colombia, Cambodia, Algeria. And I was able to travel to places that I had only dreamt of. Never in my wildest dreams did I ever think I would get an opportunity to get to visit the places I got to see while working for Channel One, because I grew up in a community outside of Sacramento, California, which was quite non-diverse. My parents got a divorce when I was 7. We didn't have a lot of money, and so the opportunity to travel was just out of my realm completely until I started working for Channel One.
And I think we're also in the era where MTV News was doing big N news.
Kurt Loder, man, he had the dream job. I wanted to be on MTV News so bad.
Yes, right? And I remember watching MTV for the music videos, but also being excited when the globe would come up and you'd get that MTV News update, because like, oh, here is news. I want to be educated about the world, but I also want it presented to me in a way that isn't the way my parents get it.
Hi, Sonia Saul here with MTV News.
Like, no joke, I loved MTV News. I think that's how I found out Kurt Cobain died. I know there's clips of Kurt Loder from MTV News talking about it.
Hi, I'm Kurt Loder with an MTV News special report on a very sad day. Kurt Cobain, the leader of one of rock's most gifted and promising bands, Nirvana, is dead. And this is the story as we know it so far.
There wasn't the internet or texting back then, just watching music videos with friends and then, holy crap, what happened? We'd always be watching MTV to watch the videos, yeah, but when MTV News started, we all sit up, because you just didn't have the same access to celebrity back then. And MTV News is how we'd learn a lot of stuff about the music scene. At least for my friends and I, that's how we'd learn about it. Also, since MTV News, Kurt Loder has some various interviews talking about his time there, and yeah, it sounded like an awesome job. just figuring things out along the way and hanging with some amazing bands.
But when I got to MTV in 1988, it was just this wonderful period, kids. There's so much money in the air. There was so much money just in the system, in the music business. Everything was booming. So you have this startup operation showing videos that they don't have to pay for. Because so much money. So you can do all this stuff, and there are no rules about what this operation should be like. You know, what do you do? How do you present it? What's going to be the format? There was none of that. You just made it up as you went along. And if you decided you wanted to go, why don't we shoot something in Tokyo? You go shoot something in Tokyo. It was great.
You know, like, I want to know what's going on. I want to rock the vote. I want to be aware of these things, but how is it going to speak to me as a kid? And I feel like Channel One News maybe did that for you. Like, it brought the message home to you as a child in a way that made it relevant and interesting, or am I off base there?
No, you're 100% on base, on target, nail on the head, whatever you want to say. and that's exactly why it was created. It was created mostly as an educational tool for teachers to be able to take these world events and use them in the curriculum. But also, it was a way to engage younger audiences with pretty obtuse or dense material, right? Depending on what it is. And here you have these super young broadcast journalism talent in the Hacienda, the Channel One Hacienda, in their cool outfits. Like, I love going back and watching the old footage. And it's so funny because almost all of that fashion is back in right now, which is hilarious. Yes. And it definitely has this like cool vibe to it, right? And I think as like 12, 13, 14, 15 year olds, right? You're going through this crisis of identity, who you are, who your friends are, trying to make your way into independence while also like struggling to balance what's going on at home, right? And like the idea of listening to an anchor on the nightly news tell you something is just like, you're like, I don't care, man. I don't want to listen to you. I have to listen to my teachers. I have to listen to my parents, my coaches, whoever. But if like cool, you know, Anderson Cooper comes by, or if it's like, you know, beautiful blonde Tracy Smith, who's like, I'm reporting on a very serious topic here. But I'm like, but your bangs are incredible though. I think like the relatability goes so far into connecting. And I think we really see that in today's modern media market and the way that young people in particular are consuming the media that they want to get their news from.
What's Good Games, I think, was formative for so many people in the video game space. The run you all had there on DLC, the show I do with Jeff Cannata, I talk about how I'm proud of the little corner of the internet we've carved out for being a positive place, a place that, you know, isn't all the terrible things the internet and video game conversations in the internet can be. And I think what you all did with What's Good Games is that and more. I think the attitude and the energy and the messaging that you all brought to that conversation was something that I don't know if anyone else has done before or after. And I'm curious if there is a connection between, you know, young Andrea seeing this stuff and then what, you know, what you were doing around the time I met you and we can confirm, and then kind of what you brought to What's Good and kind of what you're doing now.
Christian, you are so incredibly kind. Thank you for those sentiments. It's really, really nice of you. It's like, it's very humbling, right?
When, I mean it. I mean, even...
I know that you do. You're a very sincere person.
Even in a world of comments, which is like, don't read the comments, but we all do. Like, your all's comments were also great. Like, it was a great community. I was lucky enough to be on a couple of times. You were on our show several times over the years. And you can really feel, you know, the warmth of that community. And as someone who's been in the space for a while myself, I know that you all didn't get that community by accident. And it took a lot of work to shape it and to build it and to put out the stuff that you all wanted to put out to see it come back to you. So like, I'm not wearing a hat today. I almost always do, but infinite hats off. I mean, truly just an incredible run. And I'm curious what you saw wanting to get into journalism and then doing that and that career. I'm curious if you kind of talk about how you tried to shape what you all did and what you were doing as an adult.
I would love to talk about how my journey really impacted my current career. And I think it's because I have had the blessing of always knowing what I've wanted to do. I started on my middle school newspaper when I was very young, went right into my high school newspaper, knew I wanted to go to broadcast school, you know, fast-tracked my way through that, soon as I could, moved out to Los Angeles, started my on-camera career. And I have never waned from the desire to continue along that path. And I think that has been such a boon to my commitment to my values, both, you know, off camera and on camera. And I think that that is, you know, what drives my work and hopefully drives people's connection to the work that I've done. Because for me, it's all about being able to do that storytelling that I've been mentioning and to talk to people. I just love talking to people and hearing about their expertise and hearing about their corner of the world or their perspective. And, you know, for the greater part of the last almost 20 years, it's been primarily about video games and geeky news and, you know, some tech thrown in there too. But our world today, really, I think since COVID-19 pandemic, there's been just such a blurring of our life with everything that's happening around us, whether it be down the street, you know, on the other side of the city, in another state, in a neighboring country, you know, across the world. The way that social media has changed, particularly in the last 5 years, really makes the world feel so much smaller than it actually is, right? The world is a very, very big place. And when you actually get on an airplane or a boat and you go somewhere across the world, you see, oh, wow, this is not what I thought it was. Actually, I should go see more places and stop just trusting the internet for everything. But what's been great about that is that that community and that connection means that we're learning from each other, we're uplifting each other, we're providing each other support when we need it. And globally, it's a tense place in the world right now, no matter what country you're in. And clearly some have it much worse than others. And we really have to come together as a species, as the tribal community that we once were back in the day, and go, hey, like, how do we continue to support each other? And I think media is a huge way to do that. Now, my basis for what I do has always at its core been news focused. Every job I've had, every on-camera position, the way that I write, it's always about news, news, news. And that experience I had watching Channel One, you know, as a teenager, an early teen, really kind of shaped my desire to learn about that process. How do I write news? What makes broadcast writing differently? So when I was in college, I like studied radio writing in particular. I studied broadcast. And of course, I did a lot of long form print. You know, when people hear the word journalist, I think pretty often, don't want to throw out a fake statistic here, but let me just say probably the majority of the people think about a print journalist, somebody who's typing their words or writing their words, right? They don't necessarily think about an on-camera person as a journalist. And that's why I almost always use the word broadcast in front of it to talk about the very different way that storytelling is done using video than if you're only using your words, because the way that you have to tell those stories takes a very different type of craftsmanship.
The New York Film Academy website provides some definitions for print versus broadcast journalism, and I'm going to do a bad job paraphrasing it, but here's my best. Basically, print journalism still has a lot of rigorous style requirements that go into how a story is written and composed and all of that. Versus broadcast journalism, it needs to be simpler. Simpler sentences, it needs to be shorter, it needs to be quicker, and also it needs to take into account the visual element of it and also the auditory element of it. How someone says something matters when you are listening to them say it. So-and-so is dead versus so-and-so is dead, right? Written on the page, it all looks the same. Print journalism needs to take each and every word into consideration to make sure it's getting the story across. But now, with broadcast journalism encompassing internet journalism, the idea of some of those standards, I think, are further evolving, where things need to be even more conversational in style, they need to be even shorter, and working with images is more true now than ever. Even if it means the quality of the actual news you're getting might be worse. I want to take us back to Channel One News a little bit. And do you remember any specific segments? Or we talked about Lisa a little bit. Was there anyone that you remember or any segment or anything in particular that really kind of clicked for you outside of Channel One News as a big organization?
Tracy Smith, who I mentioned earlier, was the other reporter that I saw a lot in the broadcast during my time. And I just have vivid memories of her and Lisa. I actually don't remember seeing Anderson Cooper on Channel 1 at all. And I don't know if it was just because of when he was on the show. But even seeing somebody like Maria Menounos, right, who was one of those people that I wanted to be when I moved to LA to pursue my entertainment news career, she was on Channel 1. And it was always that thing of, how do I get back to Channel 1? What do I want to do this for? And let me tell you, I sent my audition tape many times. Never got a call. Tragic. But when I think about individual pieces, it's hard to remember like one piece that really stuck with me, because there was a lot of really big news during that period of time of like the mid to late 90s, right? Like I had mentioned already, you know, the Kosovo War. I'd mentioned Oklahoma City bombing. Another big one during that time, the O.J. Simpson trial. I think everybody our age has vivid memories of the news covering the O.J. Simpson trial, because it was this crazy uniting moment. But also what I really gravitated towards was a lot of the political stories, because in that era, the idea that you get to have any interaction with a politician was just out of your mind. It's like, you're never going to see any of the people that work in Washington. They're not going to come here and to North Dakota and visit you. And it really kind of gave me this intrigue and this interest in learning more about government and wanting to go to Washington, D.C. someday. And Channel One did a really fantastic job of making the politics and the laws that run this country and what our politicians that we elect are doing. Like, the democratic process is a super important part of being American. And I think a lot of people have lost sight of just how powerful that democratic process is because of all of the really frustrating things that are happening in American government right now, which I'm not going to talk about because I will definitely go down a spiral. But when I was young, there was no access, right? Like, there was no live streaming, there was no digital videos. And the way that politicians who were campaigning would go on circuits was, it just felt like it was never as prolific as it is now. Prolific is probably not the right word, but it just feels like there's so much more campaigning happening now, and probably because there's a lot more money in it now, which means that there's more stops and there's more rallies and there's more things. But that was for me a big connection point for politics. And when I took my AP government class and I got the ability, me and my friend Trish at the time, we won like one of the debates that we did, and we got the two student seats at a fundraising dinner for George W. Bush, who was campaigning to get elected president. And of course, he wanted to come to North Dakota and talk to all the farmers. And I remember going to that and having it be this like, wow, oh my gosh, he's like this big larger than life person, because I only ever saw people like him on the news. And it's almost like I almost never watch the news to hear specifically about politics now. It's everywhere else, which is a really fascinating turn for how people get that kind of information in their lives specifically.
I found this piece from Minnesota Public Radio about a campaign stop George Bush did in Fargo. I'm not sure if this is the same campaign tour Andrea was able to attend, but it certainly highlights the importance of journalism. The fact that reporters were there, documenting the stop, and we can still access it all these years later.
In his speech, Bush promised a positive campaign and a principled presidency.
I'll be an activist president who sets a tone, a positive tone, an optimistic tone, and I'll set goals worthy of a great nation.
North Dakota Republican Party leaders are hoping the Bush visit, even at this early stage in the campaign, will rally the troops and help build support for Republican candidates for governor and Congress.
When I think about my career, my training, and kind of the overlap of that and how it kind of led me to What's Good Games and all of the daily news and everything I was doing before that, what I wanted first and foremost when I started that show was, there has to be a news block. There has to be a news segment. I mean, not only is it like, you know, easy fodder for content every week, but I just love doing the news. And it turned out it was always our most popular segment. It was the thing that people, you know, wanted to hear from the most. But as time went on throughout that show, the news kept getting a little sadder and a little sadder and a little more stressful. And then it's like, okay, now what do I do when my love of news is now making me sad? What do you do, Christian?
I mean, for folks that listen to DLC, that certainly we feel that as well, where it's, you know, layoffs this, or Gen AI being used in this when it said it wasn't, or controversy, this or that. And I think it's important to talk about even in fandom, but it does, you know, it makes it difficult, especially when I think the programming that you're making is viewed as escapism for a lot of the audience. They are coming to you to hear about, yeah, the latest news, but also we're not the world anymore where you only get the morning news and the evening news. You're getting news all day, like big capital N news. And so sometimes people want to just listen to some video game chat and it's like, oh yeah, everything's on fire.
Yes. I mean, and like we talked about that on What's Good all the time about how important that escapism is. But there's this growing, you know, response from the audience being like, but you just ignored this thing. And it's an active anxiety-inducing task to have to figure out, is this the vocal minority just trolling me? Or is this what my audience actually wants? And no one wants to fill out a survey anymore. So it's like, it's really hard to actually tell like what's real and what's not when it comes to community engagement. And thank you so much for the call out to our community and how wonderful our comments were. None of that would have been possible without my wonderful partner, Brittany Brombacher, who I need to give flowers to for really making sure that we made it a safe place to have discourse about. So when the news got hard, we were able to have those conversations in a constructive way. Our community was able to have really passionate points of view, even if they were disagreeing, but they weren't allowed to be mean to each other, right? And I think one of the conversations that keeps coming up in my friend circle is the smaller and smaller pool of media ownership that we're experiencing a lot here in the United States, but really globally as well, that there's this consolidation of all of these media companies under tech oligarchs in particular, which is like troublesome. Right? Because you got to think about, is that ownership going to affect the way that they are going to write and tell stories and their objectivity? Is it going to affect what kinds of op-eds they source and all of that really important stuff when you look at, you know, the impact of media, because there's decades and decades worth of studies that show just how impactful watching television and media is on people, not just kids, but all of us. So there's no denying that. And that is a part of consuming news in particular in today's world that we have to think about. And I never had to think about that when I was in journalism school. The world is just such a different place and it hasn't even been that long.
Yeah, I'm curious how much of Channel One News served as a foundation. And then as you were in journalism school, did you think back to it actively in the moment? Or was it kind of like level one? And then as you grew, you started adding in these other forms of inspiration or foundation as you kind of built yourself up through your education?
I definitely added other sources of inspiration along the way because, like most people's student journeys, I set out thinking I was going to go in and do this one specific path. And then my path shifted and changed. Like, I honestly thought I was going to go down the path of hard news and become an investigative reporter, become, you know, like Lisa Ling or become like Barbara Walters and really go out there and get those good stories. And then when I was in college and I did my investigative unit and I got to work with like deep embedded investigative reporters, it scared the out of me. And I was like, oh my goodness, I don't think I'm ready for this. I don't think I have like the steel disposition that you have to have as an investigative reporter, because they put themselves into some very dangerous situations in the name of telling stories and bringing the truth to light and really making sure that people know what's happening. And that is such important work that is woefully and tragically underpaid on a catastrophic level for the importance of the work that a lot of investigative journalists do. But also I was like, it does not seem very fun. Does not seem like me having to like, you know, protect sources and meet in underground garages and then call the courthouse and like look up all the documents. I was like, that seems like a lot of unfun work. And I am no stranger to a lot of work. A lot of work don't scare me, but a lot of unfun work? I was like, maybe not for me, actually. And that's when I ended up doing a pivot to entertainment news because I was like, I still want to do journalism. I still want to tell stories. I still want to go out in the world and experience these things and go to places and meet people and have that experience all under the umbrella of news. But I was like, I don't think I'm going to make it if I have to go purely down an investigative route, because I was like, I think I'm just going to be sad and depressed all the time. And that's why I have such great respect for people who are true investigative reporters, because they're badasses, man. I mean, and you may see them and they may act like an asshole, and I'd be like, you know, they have to be hard because what they do is really, really hard. And I was like, I don't want to do that. I want to have fun. I want fluff. I want to give people escapism. I want people to feel good. Life is short. It's stressful. I want people to feel happy, right? I want to focus on the fun. And, you know, that's why we've had so many great conversations over so many years, whether on Weekend Confirmed or DLC or my show, because we appreciate that positivity and how important it is. But it's like the other part has to exist too. But it just wasn't going to exist in my career path. Now, I've flirted with it a couple of times. There's been some big stories in video games in particular that, you know, made me put my detective hat on and kind of whip out some skills I hadn't used in a while. But I never once wanted to go back to that full time, and still to this day have no desire.
I'm with Andrea here. I too have no desire to personally do that kind of investigative reporting. I love having conversations with people, like on this show. I loved making the official The Last of Us podcast with the folks at Naughty Dog, and I love making DLC each and every week with Jeff Cannata. But Andrea is also right that the kind of reporting is super important, even in the entertainment space and even in the video game industry. There have been a lot of great investigative pieces, like stuff about union busting, the Microsoft and Activision merger, things about holding these big companies to account and reporting the truth. Hopefully, there's room for that kind of important work to continue, and dare I say, find a way to thrive in our ever-changing media landscape. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox. We're gonna take another quick break for ads, then more with Andrea right after this.
It's 10:01 a.m. on a Monday, all at once. Your sales leader needs to know which deals are at risk. Your PM wants feature adoption by cohort, and your CFO needs one last graph for the board. Now your data team has to say no to somebody. Hex changes that. Ask any data question in plain English and get an analyst-grade response, all backed by your actual business context as defined by your data team. Start saying yes to more data questions at hex.ai.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I had this opportunity. One of the very first hosting jobs I got in Los Angeles after I moved was at this site called musicplustv.com. And it was the closest thing to being a VJ on actual MTV news that I was ever going to get. And I was so excited. They were paying me like $25 a day. I'm not even joking. It was just like peanuts. It was basically like I was an intern. And I was getting up at 4 a.m. to pull the news. I would do a national segment. I would do a state segment for California. I would do a segment on music news, on entertainment news like movies and TV. And then I had kind of like what I would call like the fun bucket, where I would do like weird human interest stories.
Yeah.
And I would write these five news blocks from like 4 to 6 in the morning. And then I would do hair and makeup for camera. And then I would get on the 101 freeway and drive down to this tiny little studio near downtown LA. And I would go live at 8 a.m. and do like 2 hours of news and VJing, where I would literally put on music videos between the news blocks. And that was my first daily job out of college. That was me using my degree and writing news and producing the segments. And I was like, I'm at MTV, but I'm not at MTV. I'm streaming to somewhere on the internet. And that's when nobody knew what internet streaming was back then. And it was like, how do I get to broadcast? And that was forever. And still today is like forever, like this weird difference between digital and broadcast when it feels so intertwined more than ever. But for news in particular, it's so different that it's really wild to think about.
And now I think there's a good chance that if you were doing that digital DJ news show, Andrea, you'd be getting more eyeballs than the broadcast equivalent, right? Like those lines have totally switched now. And it's wild to think that back then it was like, oh, this is the start to the next thing. And now it's almost like you, I mean, broadcast is still big, don't get me wrong, but like people can leave broadcast. And I'm not trying to throw ideology onto this, but like Don Lemon leaves broadcast, or Tucker Carlson leaves broadcast, leaves, gets forced out, however you want to look at it. But there's still a life outside of it that sometimes is bigger now than they were on their broadcast home.
Yes.
And I'm curious, you know, for folks that are, you know, that your work is formative for them, I'm curious what you think their path is. If they're like, you know, you saw Lisa Ling and Anderson Cooper and these people looking cool, and someone grew up seeing you looking cool in GameStop or hosting a panel on E3 for millions of people, or, you know, watching or listening to What's Good. What's their path now? Like, what do you think their journey will be that will get them to hopefully where they want to be to have the career like you've had?
That is a fantastic question that I don't have a definitive answer to.
Nor do I expect one.
No, but it's a really interesting one, because it makes me want to sit in on a journalism class, a modern journalism class, and hear like what professors are teaching and what the curriculum is. Because what I've discovered as an adult, you know, like 20 years beyond when I was in college, is that there's still this really firm grip on broadcast news in particular versus digital content. I mean, because these digital streamer apps, OTTs, whatever, you know, language you want to use to describe your Hulus, your Netflix, your Prime Videos, right? Is that the blurring of the lines is happening, but there's this resistance from like old guard who like probably own all of the actual physical hardware that broadcast is still made on, right? To not like have them be one and of the same. And it's really interesting for news, because almost all of the major news networks will clip their stories and put them on their website, because they know people want that small bite size. Hey, like I'm between meetings, or like I'm waiting to pick up my kid from the soccer practice and I'm like scrolling or whatever, right? And so it's really fascinating to look at it and kind of examine how digital has shaped the way that we consume news. Even looking at something like the block system, A block, B block, C block, D block, which is how you designate the importance of stories within your newscast. So the A block is the most important, biggest news, the thing that most of the people watching the show want to hear you talk about. And then the D block is the stuff that's interesting, but it's not critical news. Maybe it's like a local piece of legislation. Maybe it's a human interest story about a business owner, right? But it's not like if I miss that story, I miss like a huge piece of important, possibly life-affecting news, right? And so the way that that is structured is so different now, because the idea that you're going to have a captive audience for 30 minutes, like Channel One did, which is why it was so important. We have kids, 30 minutes, butts in seats, no phones in your hands, watching TV, because otherwise you have to open your textbook. So everybody watched it, right? Getting the news and hearing about what's happening in the world. And now the idea of getting anyone, let alone teenagers, to put their butt in a seat for 30 consecutive minutes, take their phones away and say, you have to watch this thing. It's bonkers, right? Like that just would not happen. And so you go, well, how could Channel One exist? How does news evolve? And what we're seeing sadly is that they're not evolving fast enough, right? Like we're seeing so many news outlets shuttering and closing, and particularly in games media where I work, it's been really, really devastating what's been happening to all of these people that I know that are great writers and great storytellers, because we're like, how do we adapt? How do we shift? Do we all just have to make like 15-second TikToks? I can't tell the news in 15 seconds. What do we do? And the moving target of AI and AI slop that is infecting news organizations and video everywhere, right? And that's the really troubling part for me as somebody who grew up loving the news and went to school to make the news, and seeing how I have to actively educate people, as we were discussing earlier, about corroborating sources. It's like, where did you get that link from? Did you go check other sites? Did you go to Snopes? Did you go to these, you know, go to Reuters, go to AP News? You got to go check multiple sources, BBC, whatever your flavor is. It's like, you have to look at the same story from as many angles as you can before you make a judgment call. And that's just not the world we live in. People don't think like that anymore. And that's really troubling, right? right? And so we look at kids and like, how do we teach kids to look at the world critically? How do we teach them to watch the news so that they know what's going on, but to also question the news, question where the source is coming from? And that's why I think the component of AI makes that really, really dangerous and really a tough conversation. Because if I look at some of the stories that I watched on Channel One when I was a kid, like when I was in my teens, some really serious heavy material, like the Oklahoma City bombing, for example, like that was a really tragic, terrible time. And stuff like that is getting made up in these AI videos, and it's just completely fake. It's just like there's these bombings or this plane crash or this like tornado or whatever the fake piece is, like the AI component to, you know, perpetuating falseness about what's happening in the world is really, really scary. And I'm hoping that this AI bubble bursts really fast. It looks like it's going to burst fast because the money is just like drying up really quickly. And it's like, I want us to be able to be in a safe place where when you watch a video from the news, you don't have to question, is that real? You should always question, why are they saying what they're saying? Why are they showing this particular part of a war and not this particular part? That's always going to be important and always has been. But you shouldn't have to question if the thing you're seeing is actually real or not. And that is a huge problem for young journalists coming up in the world today.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, I think even in the entertainment, you know, slice of that, there's the, and I've been fooled by it, like, oh, new Daredevil trailer, or oh, Daredevil confirmed in new Spider-Man. And I'm like, wait.
The most annoying. Stop tricking me.
To be completely honest here, I've been tricked by this crap numerous times. Gather round, kids. Let's hear a story about the olden times on the internet. Once upon a time, there was this thing called the internet. And believe it or not, when you watched a video on that thing called the internet, where, yes, sometimes you had to wait a painfully long time for that video to load, the stuff in that video was real. I'm not saying all videos were nonfiction reporting, etc. There were funny sketches and all sort of just fail videos then too. But the fail videos you watched back then were real fail videos. Not someone making a video that is staged to look like a fail, or making a fake trailer for a real movie that they try to pass off as a real trailer just to get eyeballs. For me, personally, unless I'm watching a movie trailer on a studio's official YouTube channel, I kind of just assume it's not a real trailer. There's just a different level of making fake crap that didn't exist before. Okay, story time over, kids. Unfortunately, they did not live happily ever after. The problem probably only got worse. The end. You know, as someone now maybe consuming that media in a different way than you did when you all were doing your shows regularly, how do you navigate that space now as just a human?
It's tough, right? Like, I think for me, it starts with education for people and letting them know these are the things that you're going to encounter when you watch content in the world. And it also comes back to the idea of being passionate about what you're making. And if you're going to choose to join the fray of digital video, to, you know, have a commitment to what you're making and make a commitment not only to yourself as a creator, but to your audience, to do right by the people who are watching your content. And I think that is something that we've seen a lot more of. It feels like audiences are being disrespected a lot, and that feels bad, right? It doesn't feel good when someone talks to you like you're stupid, or is talking down to you, or tells you something that you know isn't true, and they're trying to convince you it is, and you're like, I know that that's not real. And like, that feels bad. And we're getting a lot of that from many angles now. And that also comes from this consolidation of media ownership and the consolidation of channels, and more so like the infotainment side of news, and how so many broadcasters who call themselves news people are more like pundits and comedians and, you know, on camera hosts. But I mean, the problem though is that I went to journalism school. I took multiple media and ethics classes. I had to go through the gauntlet of my professors and then my real world like internships and the things that like will really test that and put you to your mettle of like, are you actually, do you know what it means to see the difference? And a lot of these homegrown journalists never take an ethics class. They never have a professor professor or somebody who's worked professionally in the field guiding them, a mentor, anybody telling them like, hey, you can't do this thing and this thing together. It's a conflict of interest. And we're seeing that a lot in entertainment news in particular, in video games. It happens quite frequently, but we're seeing it across the board in other verticals too. And so that's a big concern with the difference in the way that news is produced and digital video at large is produced. It's like it ties right into the fake news cycle of what is real, what is AI slop, who got paid to take what, why are they writing this story, is this review real? And then you get into this spiral, right? And then you just nope out of it all. And that's not the answer. We can't just not be informed. Well, how do we fix it? And I don't have a good answer for that question. One of the things that really stuck with me from all of the professors in my journalism program back when I was in college was the driving home of don't become a journalist if you want to be rich. Don't take this job if you want to make a lot of money. You are in the wrong major. You're in the wrong field. Journalists typically get paid pretty low. Ones that work at newspapers don't get paid very much at all. If you're lucky enough to get a broadcast job, you have to work a lot of different high up markets to even get something comparable. Even today, here in Los Angeles, if you look at ABC7, let's say, for what the job openings are, most of the mid-level jobs are like maybe $35 an hour for a newscaster in a top two market on a major broadcast network like ABC. And it's really debilitating to think, oh, I love what I do. I want to keep doing it. But gosh darn it, my insurance just keeps going up. You know, the rent just keeps going up. The price of milk, the price of everything just keeps going up. And it's like, how do I keep going with this, knowing that I want to keep doing it, but it's just not paying the bills? And that's what's really hard about the digital revolution for news, is that it created a wonderful, awesome sense of audience connection through authenticity and transparency. Like, YouTube fundamentally changed the way that people interact with media and with news in particular. But what it also did is it created this tenet in people's minds that they don't have to pay for the content that they watch, that they just get to watch whatever they want to watch for free. Or they'll watch, you know, a couple seconds of ad and then they'll hit skip ad, right? Or they'll pay for, you know, a premium subscription that the creators on the platform get a tiny, tiny fraction of. Yes, they get some, but it's a fraction, right? And that is a really tough pill to swallow for news writers, broadcasters, people who make things that are important to people's lives, because you're like, don't you think that this is worth it? And we've seen now over the last decade that more and more people are saying it's not worth it. The shuttering of big newspapers, the shuttering of online outlets, the shuttering of TV stations, and going, at what point do I have to ask myself as a producer, as somebody who looks at the P&L, the profit and loss, right, of the business, because this is a business. Everything costs money, the lights, the cameras, the computers, the internet, right? It all costs something. At what point do I go, hey, the L's are too big to overcome what the P is, right? The profit is just not there. And it's like, if you can't pay yourself, if you can't pay your people, then what keeps you going? You know, like, who's going to pay for it? And like, that's really like the hard part for me, is like seeing so many friends of mine, so many other outlets, even big things like we talked about the Access Hollywood news and like the death of daytime TV, and how tragic that is, particularly for me as somebody who grew up watching that and going like, where is it? But there's hope, Christian, because it's not just that it's all going away. It's that it's pivoting, it's moving, it's going to other places. And people are seeking out, you know, Substacks to find their news. They're seeking out places like Democracy Now! To watch their news. They're even seeing people like MSNBC pivot to MS Now and doing a big push into a lot of digital only content and trying to go, hey, how do we meet people where they're at? And where I kind of sit in all of it, thinking about all of the shows that I've worked on, all of the outlets that I know that are gone, particularly in video games, right? Like, so many we could pour one out for. Like, where is my next path in news? Like, and I'm still figuring out, where does Andrea Renee go? I still want to eat, sleep, and breathe news. What is the next thing for me? And I'm still figuring that out. I don't have an answer yet. And trust me, I'm frustrated that I don't have an answer either. I didn't mean to give you all of that setup to be like, I don't know, Christian. But it's like, it's hard because it's moving so fast. I don't want to make the wrong bet, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if there's an answer. But I do know, Andrea, that like it or not, I'm going to put this on you, that I think what you have done has been as formative for so many people the way Channel One was for you. And I hope, if nothing else, that is, you know, something to carry you to whatever's next. Because, you know, as you look back on Channel One News and you brought this to the show, which I absolutely love, I hope there is someone sitting down right now and they don't even know it yet, right? Because when the core memory happens, you don't even know it. But someone is looking at what you all did and they're like, there's a way to do it. There's a way to do it right. There's a way to do it that's fun. And there's a path forward. And hopefully, you know, the kids can figure it out and keep carrying that torch forward, because I'd hate to see it kind of just go away, you know?
I firmly believe it won't. I think things are cyclical. I think it'll come back around. When? I don't know. What it will look like? I don't know. But I know that there's a lot of really passionate storytellers out there, and the younger generation coming in has more tools than you or I ever dreamed of having when we were in school. And that is the really exciting part for me.
And you better believe that this is true. The tools available to people today and the relative cost of access to those tools is something that just did not exist before. There's a wonderful part in the interviews with Francis Ford Coppola on the future of cinema that's part of 1991's Hearts of Darkness, A Filmmaker's Apocalypse, where Mr. Coppola talks about how the tools changing, even back when he was making Apocalypse Now and around that era, could lead to more great things being made.
To me, the great hope is that now these little 8mm video recorders and stuff are coming around. Some just people who normally wouldn't make movies are going to be making them. And, you know, suddenly one day some little fat girl in Ohio is going to be the new Mozart, you know, and make a beautiful film with her little father's camera recorder. And for once, the so-called professionalism about movies will be destroyed forever, you know, and it'll really become an art form.
Andrea, for folks that are, you know, inspired by what you've done and are excited about what you're doing next, where can people hear more about what you're doing, get more of the great stuff you're making, and or find you in this wonderful big world we live in?
Well, I'm so glad you asked, Christian, particularly right now, because I've been asked that question a lot over the last year and a half. And I was like, I'm taking a break because I definitely had some really severe burnout having gone for so many years in a row. But I'm really excited about a new project that I've been kind of working on in secret. We, under the radar, announced it last summer right ahead of Gamescom. I am teaming up with Adam Boyes, who people may know from his days at PlayStation. He was also the co-CEO of Iron Galaxy, a really famous code developer in video games, also the creators of Killer Instinct and Rumbleverse and a bunch of other things. And he left to go start his own consultancy group to try to help fix some of the video game industry's biggest problems. And I did a fireside chat with him at Games Beat Summit last year. And I was really inspired by his talk, which was share early, share often. And it was all about how transparency can help teams get success and give success, and how the video games industry thinks that they have all these secrets, but really, there's not really too much technology that's really top secret anymore in today's modern game making. And it's like, why don't we share more of this? And I was like, that's a story I would love to tell. I feel like I'm entering into my Oprah era, Christian, where I really am just going to like sit back in a chair and
yes,
hopefully make somebody cry at some point in an interview. Because I've gotten the absolute honor and pleasure of meeting so many wonderful, talented people in the video games industry across my career. And so many stories that left on the cutting room floor that I'm like, this is such a good story. It's so fascinating. I want to tell more of those stories. And so when I talked to Adam about what he's doing, I was like, we should start a show. We should start a show and we can make it something different. And would you believe it, Christian? We're not adding the news.
Oh, bum, bum, bum.
There's no news in the show and I'm kind of beside myself about it, but it's good for me. It's good for me because, I mean, aside from the production benefits alone, giving me more time to source guests and shoot everything and do all the editing and all that, the news will inherently lock the content to a specific point in time. And a lot of these issues that the video game industry is facing are rolling issues and they do kind of ebb and flow each year. It's a little different, right? But we really wanted it to be educational and evergreen and have the conversations be impactful. And we don't want to waste anyone's time, right? Earlier in our discussion, I talked about how important respecting your audience is. And that's something that feels like it's been lost from a lot of the content that we watch today. And I want to make something that I would listen to, and hopefully a lot of other people want to listen to it too. So the show is called Gaming Decoded, and it's all about the video game business. We talk to experts of all kinds, you know, so the first couple of episodes should be available by the time this episode you're listening to this podcast. You should be able to go to our Team Vibrato Challenge, and your spell check is probably going to try to autocorrect that to vibrato, and it is vibrato, double V's, V-I-V-R-A-T-O. And you can find it, Gaming Decoded, and watch some of our first episodes about these issues. We talk about video game publishing. We talk about go-to-market plans. We talk about working with international teams for distribution. And we talk about how people in the industry talk to each other and have some great conversations. And I'm really excited on doing more. We have this really fun segment that I created called Glossary Decoded. And did I custom make it specifically for social media? Of course I did. But what I love about it is this is an idea I've toyed around with for a really long time. And I've always wanted to do like a jargon dictionary of sorts. And so what we're doing with this segment is we're getting these people who have decades of experience in their field and letting them pick a word, like a jargon word,
yeah,
or a word from the industry that is controversial or maybe has different meanings. And then they get to decode it and provide a definition. And it's a really fun little segment that's baked in the episode.
That's awesome. Yes. Oh, man. Very excited. Those are out now. If you're listening to this, please go and check those out. Something I like to ask everybody at the end of the show is a quote, and it can be something from Channel One News that stuck with you, or it can be a song lyric that stuck in your head. In my house, it's Cat's Eye. Constant Cat's Eye song lyric stuck in my head. And then, much to the chagrin of my children, me echoing those lyrics back to them. And they're like, "Now it's not cool anymore, Dad." And I'm like, "Well, that's what you get." do you have a quote that rattles around in your head rent-free, or something that's has stuck with you for a while?
Oh my gosh, so many. I do want to note that it's Danny Go at my house. The music that is pervasive. Also a lot of K-pop Demon Hunters, which I do love. But
yes,
no quotes from K-pop or from Danny Go.
We'll get to Andrea's quote, which is gnarly, because, like I said, lots of Cat's Eye in my house at the moment. Yeah, my kids think I'm super cool. What can you do sometimes? All right, we'll get back to Andrea and her quote right after this quick ad break. We'll be right back.
Any team that's tested AI tools for data has seen the pattern already. AI gives a different number than your BI tool. Metrics don't match across teams, and inevitably, users lose trust. It turns out, turning on AI is easy, but making it work on data is not. Hex AI was built to solve this. The key is nailing context. Hex is built to unify and curate your data context for agents. Data teams can observe, govern, and continuously improve every AI answer, so answers get smarter the more your team asks. The result? Your entire organization asks data questions in natural language and trusts the answers. Not because the AI got lucky, because it knows your business and its data. Because that's what an AI analytics platform should do. Join data teams from Cursor, Lovable, Ramp, AWS, and over 2,000 more at hex.ai.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I have 2 quotes. The first one is something that if you have a conversation with me, you're almost assured to hear, which is, you can't get what you don't ask for. I say this quote all the time, and it applies in a wide variety of situations. You can't get what you don't ask for. So if you want something, either go get it or ask for it. The worst they're going to say is no.
Love that. And then you're back where you were anyway.
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, like, it's just, I think the thing is, we sometimes sometimes get in these anxiety loops of not wanting to offend people or make somebody mad or put expectations up on people. And it's like, well, if you want a thing, you have to ask for the thing. That person can't read your mind. They're not going to know what you want. And so just ask for it. I mean, ask politely and nicely. Don't be mean about it, but like ask for it. And then maybe you'll get it. Maybe you won't. That's okay. Sometimes you don't get that.
I love that. I'm going to remember that here in a minute. Go ahead. Second quote, though.
This second quote has one that's been really sticking with me for the last couple of years in particular. Really, like after I turned 40, went through like the obligatory midlife crisis of like, what am I doing? Where's my career? I'm almost halfway. Like, what am I going to do? This quote was in a tiny little book given to me by Brittany, my partner at What's Good, when we first started the show. And it's one of those little dinky books you get like at the checkout, like a gift store. If you're at like Barnes & Noble, it's like that little rack of these tiny little things you get and you put a bow on it and you give it to someone, right? You guys all visualing what this little tiny book looks like? It's like words of encouragement or something on the front. Motivational speaking, affirmation card type vibe. And there's this quote that I come back to a lot. And I think it's so important to think about, to meditate on. Success is getting what you want. Happiness is wanting what you get. Success is getting what you want. Happiness is wanting what you get.
Man, that's a fun would you rather also.
I mean, I'd like both, please.
Yeah.
but I love this quote, particularly at this point of my life, because I think as we get older, our desires for what makes us happy change. And we look hard at what we're sacrificing for the success that we think we want and go, is that the happiness that I'm seeking? Is the outcome that I get from my success and whatever your definition is for you in your life, is that going to make me happy? Is that the thing that I want? And once I get it, will I have achieved nirvana? And it's a really important question to ask. We live in, you know, really turbulent times and life comes at you fast sometimes, you know, and you just got to think about, am I doing the thing that's going to make me successful and happy? And if I have to sacrifice one of those, which one am I going to sacrifice? Some deep thoughts to meditate on.
I love that one. I think people need to spend more time thinking about that. Thank you, Brittany, for that wonderful little airport book gift.
I should have brought it. It's so cute. It's this dinky little book. I'm going to keep it forever.
Well, now the best part about your first quote, Andrea, is that I'm going to ask something. And the worst case scenario is I don't get it and you say no, but I feel so inspired right now. Would you do me the honor of giving us a broadcast news style good night or whatever those are called, the wrap it up the way they would if we were kids in a middle school and it's the end of Channel One News? Could you say goodbye for us?
Oh, wow. I mean, admittedly, I haven't done this in a long time, but you know what? It's like riding a bike. I think I can turn the muscle memory back on. All right, let's think about what I'm going to say here. Trying to think of how much of a lead-in I want to give. I want to give a couple sentences. Do I want to just give one? Do I want to just say my name? These are all the things going through my head right now. You can definitely
I'm sorry.
You can definitely just cut all of this.
No, this is the part I'm keeping.
Okay. Christian, what we've learned is that media in today's market is harder for people to ingest and consume than ever before. But there is hope, and digital media is the future. For all broadcasters struggling and trying to make it out there everywhere, I'm Andrea Renee. Stay classy, San Diego.
Ooh, that's so good. And on the spot, too, for people listening to this, that was truly on the spot. Well done. Oh my goodness. What a treat. Thank you. That's why you got to ask, people. That's why you got to ask.
Exactly. <You don't> Can't get what you don't ask for.
Amazing. And now is the part where I get to ask all of you listening to please tell your friends about us. Review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It really makes a difference. And if you find value in this show, if you want to make sure it continues, consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/formativemediashow. Formative Media was created and is hosted by me, Christian Spicer. Thanks again to Andrea Renee for joining us. I loved this conversation so very much. This is a show made by real people for you. Our amazing opening theme song was by Tim McEwen. You can find him on Instagram as Varsity Blue Tim, and you can check out his band, The Midnight, wherever you get your music.
Our podcast album art photograph was taken by Jordan Epstein. AJ Filari is our editor, and as always, they absolutely make each and every episode sing. Thank you, AJ. And of course, thank you for listening. Until next time, live the moments you'll be nostalgic for later. See you next time.
Any team that's tested AI tools for data has seen the pattern already. AI gives a different number than your BI tool. Metrics don't match across teams. And inevitably, users lose trust. It turns out, turning on AI is easy, but making it work on data is not. Hex AI was built to solve this. The key is nailing context. Hex is built to unify and curate your data context for agents. Data teams can observe, govern, and continuously improve every AI answer, so answers get smarter the more your team asks. The result? Your entire organization asks data questions in natural language and trusts the answers. Not because the AI got lucky, because it knows your business and its data. Because that's what an AI analytics platform should do. Join data teams from Cursor, Lovable, Ramp, AWS, and over 2,000 more at hex.ai.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.